through the horses right now doing that. Black silk stockings, and here's the things I do. I mark down my ESP visual perception of how that horse runs, which in this case you'll see the P. Then I go over and I give him a speed rating on at least the last race. Now the speed rating that I put down the speed rating plus one half the track variant. And that's very, very effective. Tom Hamilton wrote about that in the follow-up probably, what, year and a half, 2 years ago that Tom had that article in there on this subject. It works very, very well. Pardon? Not now. That's just all I do. These happen to be all from my same one. But this step, the only thing I do is I just do that. It's just mechanical for me. And then if you go over to the right column, you'll see a check there alongside the 8, the number of horses in the race. This to me is one of my most important things that I do. If a horse has ran in the top half of his field last time, I put a check there, and it's very, very seldom that horse does not go forward into the further handicapping process if he's top half of the field. I find that I put thousands of races into my computer and said, what are the common characteristics of a winning horse? And for at my tracks, at least, that is far and above the most dominant characteristic that a horse wins usually has. Not always, but for these thousands of races of my tracks I put through, that is the one most dominant item. Might not be for you. Is for me. And while I'm at Black Silk Stockings right there, before I leave him, I say, hey, he's top half the field. He's got a nice tidy 85. And I put that little check over alongside that 6 furlong, which means I'm going to use that line. I can tell there's no other line on there that I'm going to use for that horse to run him. It happens to be a maiden line, but there's no other really good line there. 5 1/2s, he's got a 79 on his 5 1/2, but 5 1/2s just do not, I prefer not to use them. I prefer to use a 6 if I've got the 6. And besides, I don't know how it is at your tracks, when I speed rate and when I do anything, your energy in the 5 1/2 is a little bit skewed compared to your 6, and so I just try to avoid them if I can. I move down to no principles. And I do the same thing. I do his last speed rating. It's an 85. He's not top half, but it's his first time out, so I can excuse it. And look at there, he ran at stakes. He's up against permission. There's no... that's a very excusable race. So I've got to go back on him if I'm going to keep him. Go back to that second line. That's a 5 1/2. He gets a speed rating of 90. That's the 80 plus 1/2 of the 21. Gives me a 90. That's top half the field. Notice how I've checked his last two races over at the right, or the bottom two races. He was top half both times. But this is a 3-year-old race. The race that I know I'm going to have to use if I use the horse. And golly, I'm going to use a horse that they thought enough of to put in stakes. I got to use a race from last year, and that's a 2-year-old. He was a puppy last year. And I know that those guys, you know, a lot of that oats they eat in that year from 2 to 3 becomes a lot of muscle tissue and a lot bigger, stronger horse, and they're going to run a lot better, probably. Maybe not, but probably. So note, I wrote out on the left line, on the left column, 2-year line. And that's giving me a little warning, saying, hey, this line may not be giving this horse enough. And I think you all probably do something similar to that. I mean, if you don't in these circumstances, you might think about it. So I'll go to Agitated Rider. He just ran in October. He ran at maiden special weight, but he ran at Playfair. I do his speed rating. I get an 88 at Playfair. And that's part of my circuit. And I know when a Playfair horse ships to Long Acres, I can take at least 10, if not 15 points off of his total speed rating to what I run at Long Acres. And maybe every two or three seasons we'll have a horse from Playfair that wins a race. So he's gone. Down to Simple Choice, I go through my same process. I note that the horse is an early presser. I mark that in. I note that that horse is first-time Lasix. It means he bled last race. You'll see up the top of the Lasix, it says Simple Choice, and Simple Choice doesn't show Lasix in the medication column before. So I know he bled last time. That's an excusable race for that horse. He's ran once this year. He's had some conditioning. In fact, he ran pretty good. You can see right in his last line where he started bleeding, where he started giving it up. And so I say, hey, I better use Simple Choice. And what's a good usable line on him? I look at the first line last year, and it's on the slop. I've circled that. He did win, but the speed rating's not that good. So I move back to the 5.5. You can see I got a check on the 5.5. And again, that's a 2-year line for a 3-year-old horse. And I put my little warning out to the side, 2-year line. Move down to Miss Manitou. And Miss Manitou, same story as hers with Agitated Native from Playfair. And the rating is an 81, and so that means it might run a 65 today. A speed rating, so out it goes. Sunny Pursuit, next horse. It's ran once this year. Ran at 5.5. I say the horse is a sustained horse. It's top half of the field. It was fourth out of 8 horses. Its speed rating, 71 plus half of 20, makes it an 81. I'm going to keep the horse. And I look up and down my column of races, the past performance, and there's nothing really that much better as a 2-year-old, so I'll use the last race. And 95.5 is coming off layoff. I look at the horses, and I find, you can see where I did a couple speed ratings. Look to me like the horse. My speed ratings you'll see written over there is a 77 and down to an 85. The horse was definitely going off before it went on layoff. Its works are not exceptional. I have found, and this is just plain experience at Long Acres, our California shippers have quit winning up there their first run or two. They may have class, but they don't have our sand surface to run on, and it usually takes them a time or two. So I throw the horse out. So I've got a few horses to put in the computer. Well, the first thing I do is I use phase one next, and I use phase one as a winnowing process. I cannot really bet on it like Dick and Tom do, or I haven't tried. I use it as a winnowing process to see if there's some horses that I really shouldn't be using. And in this case, there's 4 horses that I put in it. You'll see the phase one printout there. It's kind of in the middle of the page on the right. And I put down my difference between early and late on the adjusted and looked at my total pace. And they go from a 170 to a 161. And hey, what the heck? This is within range. And I want to put at least 4 or 5 horses in the computer if I can. And so I'm going to keep the 4 horses. So I'm going to zip over to DC Pars. And so I plug the horses into DC Pars. And you put them into DC Pars, and that's right there on that page too, that same page, your right-hand page. And the first thing that comes up of DC Pars is the energy generator, which is at the top of your page. You note it? Everybody see the energy generator at the top of the page? On these 4 horses? Yeah, the Kinnick. Look over the ESP type on these 4 horses. I've got an early, and a sustained. Well, I'll tell you, part of my handicapping process on this race is absolutely done right now. I know, and I don't care how they look in running styles, I know I got three earlies and one sustained. And I know that sustained is going to get $20. I know that right now, no matter what my rest of my readouts say. And I tell you guys, when you got, and I don't care what they look like on the readouts, I mean on your visual, but when you find races where you have all sustained and there's one early presser, better put some money on him. Or the reverse, they're all earlies and there's a sustained, better put some money on him. That horse has got an advantage because he's got the aberrant running style against the rest of the horses. I have seen races where I've had over there in this, and this is the readout from the engine. I've seen races where I've had one early show there, and that horse has never had the lead in his life, and the rest show sustained, and that son of a gun wired the field. I've had that. Bet him. You got to have some faith. Bet him. Okay. So, let's look a little more at the DC Pars. We talked a little bit about DC Pars yesterday, and we'll take a quick look at two columns. Look at the par median column on the DC Pars. You got an 893, an 877, an 889, and a 927. You see something that sticks out there? You got it. That 927 sticks out. And let's take a look at TDP. An 864, an 853, an 865, and an 897. Anything stick out there? 897, both belong to Sonny. And wow, Sonny in that engine was the only sustained. Okay, let's put the thing into thermation, and let's take a look at it. Spence, you're on board. You're up, man. Okay, there's the entry. And let's go to the engine. I've got a little difference, but they're all at my track, and I felt that this will say that I can use the automatic, or maybe the alternate, but I don't really feel like I necessarily need it. I'm going to look at them playing with number one. So let's go number one, adjust them, Spence. Automatic. Okay, now before we look at his screen, we'll let them run across the board. We will let them do that. Now, I know from my using Thurimation, and I model Thurimation, and frankly, those of you that are starting with Thurimation or those that are using it that have had some trouble with Thurimation, you might try this. Thurimation, I was having the winners, but I was having trouble coming out with them because I'm one of these guys that got to tinker and I've got to do, not tinker, I don't tinker with numbers, but I was trying to read everything on Thurimation. You know, you've got page after page, and they're good and they get you winners. But I found out by doing a little bit of modeling and looking at my pace lines and my horses on Thurimation, the first screen that comes up, whether it matches the number 9 screen or not, the damn thing wins 74% of the time, my top two horses. So I kind of stick to my first screen out of the number 6 that comes up. I kind of like that screen. Like it a bunch. So let's run them across and see how it looks this way, though. Go ahead, Spence. Run them across. You're on number 9?
Well, the jockey almost fell off.
Okay. There's the run across. Black and No, Simp and Son. And I do know I maybe got some questions about these lines, too, because I got some two-year lines. So let's go to number instant pre-play.
What is
Let's see what it looks like in instant replay. There's my first one that came up, and that's my 74% screen. And I'll be damned, the horse I'm going to put $20 on anyway, he's first. And black is second. This is my number one screen for me. Take a look at the next one and see what we get in that. I'm not going to bet the next one. I might use it for a cover, but I'm really not going to bet it. And sun falls off the limb, black stays. Right? Who are you going to bet in this race, guys? You bet you're going to bet Sun and Black. Who are you going to box? Okay. Let's take a look at the results.
Wait a minute,
yes.
Before everyone gets the results chart.
I
don't like to interrupt you. Spencer, bring up the turn time and turn fraction pie graph. Let's back this thing up with the...
Okay, you can look at that if you want. But this is telling you how I handicap and what I do. I wouldn't say you guys go to the window at this point. You can look at other things.
Huh?
They're
7 and 8. No winner, but I'll bet you I can tell you here in about a half a minute.
Turn time. Got 233. Got here's no is 3380. 3385 is my big one. That's no.
And black.
No and black are my two big ones.
Final fraction.
Okay, let's go to final fraction.
There's sun.
Sun.
Black.
And black.
Right there's one of the two.
Black sticks out on both. Got a little mix on the other ones. So let's take a look at the results. Could we have the lights? And you'll see the same readouts. You'll see the same readouts printed on the next page, 148. And on 149 gives the results. Would you believe in that little short field, that nice little sunny horse paid $55.20? Would you believe that cute little exacta, those two horses together, the $2 exacta pays $252.60 per $2 unit? Pretty tidy, guys. Now, I usually don't get... Yes, I usually don't get races that are this big, and we don't get them that often. But when you do, and they stand out like that, better bunch it up a little bit and buy them. Yes?
Just out of curiosity, how large are your mutual pools?
Our total handle out of 10 races... We do about $1.1 million, $1.2 million.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yes. What?
That was at Yakima.
That was my Yakima profile. This is Long Acres race.
Bruce.
Yes. Go ahead, Tom.
Do you relate anything to the earlier sustain makeup very good part of the Thermation printout?
Do I use that?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I'm finding a present time for my track, and with my modeling of Thermation, I probably shouldn't say it, but everybody has their own style, and this is what you're supposed to tell. I probably don't even run them across the screen. When it comes up that first one, I punch number 6 and bet my first two horses and exit the program.
If you'd have paid for the program, you'd run them across the screen.
Yes, question over here.
I run them across the screen. You're missing half the fun.
What happened to No Principles? He's up so high on all the ratings and everything, and he didn't even show.
Oh. Yeah, he was my horse to beat, and he's one of the reasons I got such good money out of that race.
Oh, okay.
He was, I think, 3-2. Okay, thank you much. Thanks, Doc.
Thank you, Rick.
I love that. Did you ask that question, Donna? Which lady asked that question?
Right here in the blue.
Oh, she's all right, though. I like that. You know, that's having high expectations. My gosh, there are three horses with 100, and they're all supposed to come in first. But the 100 horses, if you get 2 out of 3, actually, they call that an exact, and it's pretty good. Those 100 horses, as you saw from that readout, do come in the money a lot. And I notice how quickly you forget. See how you are? You're chippy on me. He said, which horses would you box? And you all said, those two. And that's fine for this week. But if you want to talk money management strictly for playing exactus, I'm telling you right now, folks, unless you're a lot better player than or handicapper than I am, you better be boxing three. But that's up to you. Like the guy says in the General Motors ad, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. Or you can take his advice now or you can take it later. But sooner or later, when you start losing those exactas by one horse, just because you wanted to get it down to two, you will start boxing three horses or quit playing. And when you do trifectas, throw in four horses. You notice that the printouts in here for the formation are small. And when you try to run them through yours, maybe they come out real big and take forever to print. Anybody have that problem where they're real big? Okay, this is created through a program called Graph Tracks, which you enter before your program. You put in the word Graph Tracks, and then you slip in your disk, and or you can put it on your hard disk or whatever else. I mean, you do, and you will get this automatically. These small, quickly printed printouts by pressing right shift and print screen. And the program is $15. My son will sell it to you. It's a private enterprise of his. We encourage private enterprise, even when we don't encourage it. You get it any time you want. Tom Renner wants to clarify something. He mentioned about coming up with a horse and getting 80% of the time. You don't do use a microphone here, shall I bring it to you? And a lot of people cornered him in the hall, practically felled him on his cane. And he would like to just make a disclaimer of some kind here.
Evidently, everyone misunderstood what I said last night. Or maybe my mouth was. I'm going to blame it on you. I ain't going to take the rap for this. Anyway, maybe my mouth wasn't working. This 1.4 horse. If you run, you know, this is also going to make you do your class in APVs. The only reason I brought it up is because I know a lot of you are lazy and don't do them. Right? Okay. Your number one APV horse, you divide your number two APV or class. This will work with either one. It's more dominant in the APV than it is the class, though. If you divide your number two APV horse into your number one APV horse, you're always going to get a one because the one's bigger than the two, right? But the real break point on this was 1.389 whatever. Anyway, so we took it up to 1.4. Anytime these horses are 1.4 or better, your number two APV horse is 1.4 of your number one APV horse. Judge, I know I can see it in your eyes. You're lost. Anyway.
It's stimulating.
Yeah. If you divide the number two APV number into the number one APV number, and it comes up with a 1.65, this is an almost automatic place bet.
Here's your number one APV horse. Here's your number two APV horse.
Right.
So we divide 185 by 142.
Right.
Which is one, as somebody quickly with a handheld calculator, 1.35. That's not enough.
No. What will happen, sometimes I've had two or threes a day, and sometimes I've run a week or 10 days and never see another one. But I'm telling you, they'll run place a whole bunch of times. Yes, you can use this with your APV. I use it with APV only. But it also works with class, but not near as dominating.
You're saying
that the
high APV
one. No, I ain't saying to bet nothing.
No, but it's high APV one. No, when it exceeds 1.399 something, this doesn't. See, that would not be that bet.
Yeah.
But this, Let's say this one. This is your second high. Now we'll divide this by this. Somebody quick.
No calculators
one,
in that
one,
room?
144. Now we got it.
See, now you got a qualifier.
That qualifies.
That horse, I'm telling you.
So
the number two APV by the number two APV,
M is exceeding 1.40, which it has three times in his life, it wins 100% of the time.
Which horse?
The number two APV horse.
This horse right here. This horse.
He'll run second so many times it'll make your eyes fall out on the table.
Oh, you're not looking.
Okay. Now you got it. What qualifies for the race?
Oh,
that's not open that can of worms. Now we want to know whether you make discounts for state breads and how many lifetimes. Just do APV the way it says, or the way you do it.
This works at Turf Paradise. It's worked at the Woodlands. It's worked at Remington Park. It's worked all over. Every place myself and another person go, this has worked. Like I say, sometimes you won't get one for a week and a half, and sometimes you have three of them in a day.
Give Chuck Sale your number. Yes, Chuck?
We're just talking here. We misunderstood you yesterday.
Everybody misunderstood me.
That's why he's here today.
That's why I cleared it up this morning.
Versus the rest of your field. Right.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to clear it up.
Well, he was a little nervous yesterday. Today he's aggressive.
Oh, okay.
So just forget what I told you last night and remember what I told you this morning.
All right.
See, I fessed up to my mistakes.
I got some questions that I got to clear up.
No, you don't.
Take too long. Well, I won't take too long.
Go ahead.
When I've been asked already, do I always use the SP screen? Wrong. Sometimes the EX screen comes up first.
Comes up first is what you said.
Yeah, but if I've been asked this, I want to double clarify it. It's the one that comes up first for me. Sometimes it's EX, sometimes it's ESP.
Good thing you didn't have that group when you let us on the beaches on D-Day, didn't it? They all ended up in Belgium. It's nice when the teacher suddenly finds out that almost everything you said gets misinterpreted by the audience. I get things. I heard, when I was at the seminar, you said so and so and so and so, but when I got those tapes from Joe Ray, he edited them so you said something else. Or, I must have a different version of the Yellow Manual because mine didn't say that. When I first time I read it, that wasn't in there. But I slipped it in somewhere. I came to your house and slipped in. This is natural phenomenon with people in the learning curve. Believe me. Yes, sir. The buyer speed rating? Listen, that's a can of worms. The buyer speed ratings are there. Some people find them very useful. We will recommend them when we have tested them nationwide for a period of time. We will either recommend them or say or give you what our appraisal of them. We know what the speed ratings do. We've tested them. So we don't want to control your life, but be careful with those buyer ratings, because Andy Beyer does not make those ratings, which may be a good thing. Oh, sir. Oh, the consensus? You mean when you read the little people in the racing forum and give you their recommendations and then the consensus at the end? Well, our recommendation is, we figured out all that. Our recommendation is that you look to see, if you don't know who the favorite is automatically, look to see who the public's going to bet on the most. And then you look to see if you have a horse that can give you higher odds. And then, but you don't just look at that and then find another horse to beat it. This is called value. Value is knowing who's going to win, but not liking the odds of that horse. So you find a horse with higher odds and bet it.
And then when the guy who bet the horse to win gets his money, you say, yeah, but you only got $8. If my horse had won, I'd have got $11. And those value guys, they go through life that way. They go through life, and once in a while they hit one. Value, let me tell you something. When you win the race, it's an overlay. When you lose the race, no matter what it would have paid, it's an underlay. I've never known a consistent winner to ever be concerned with value. It's the guys who don't win that keep talking value. Yeah, but you win a lot of races, but value. If you win a lot of races, you'll get some value. If you lose a lot of races, you don't get much value. Simple as that. All right. You've all heard my money management thing. And mine is started out the one that Dick Schmidt's going to present to you. You start the way he's going to tell you. And I want to tell you something before Dick comes up here. This is the way he started. Sometimes we say something and then somebody finds out it was true and they thought it was just something we said just for effect. This is very true what Dick's going to tell you. He started with a very small bank and has never drawn from it. Now, Dick's going to talk about learning how to win first and telling you to be cautious about place and show. And I, of course, encourage you to take advantage of all the pools. But that doesn't mean that he's telling you never bet place or show. That means he's telling you learn how to win before you start dabbling in all the exotics and all the other ways to go. Part of the rubber band technique that works for me is to place all my bets, my win bets, from half of my bank that I'm going to take up. How many you bet, like, say, over 100 a day, average, that's right. How many of you bet a little over 200 a day? How many of you bet, like, 400 a day? Good. That's what I found, much to my surprise, that I bet every day I went to the track, I bet at least $400. And I didn't realize I was betting that much because I was taking pride. I'm just a small bettor. And so I counted it up one day. I'm betting $400. So what I do is take $200. And when I get there, if I don't have my own readouts, I have them but somebody else's. My son will do them. Or I'll meet a client and I'll look at his readouts. And I'll look at the race before and make sure they're right, or as right as they're going to get. And make all my win bets, 60-40, before the races start. How many of you do that? Glenn Connolly, a winner, and Tipton Gilbert, and Dennis the Menace. That's good. That's three people. That's the most I've ever had in any one room. You know what everybody tells me? You can't do that. Huh? That's stupid, because you know what the odds are. For 8 years, I guess it was, I came to Las Vegas and went to Mexico. And you remember back in those days? They didn't have any television screens. They didn't tell you the odds. They wrote a little morning line on the board. And that's all you got. And they had a second line, which they made up to try to stimulate betting, but it wasn't true. That's all you got. And I heard people say, well, you can't bet until you know what the odds are, and how are you going to do that? That's why you can't go to Vegas, because they won't tell you the odds, and they're out to get you. All I did was bet the morning line, go off to Lake Mead and fish, or whatever else I might have done. I was a little younger then. I might have done something even more daring. And then come back at night and see how I did. My average mutual was, back in those days, I wasn't nearly as proficient as it was now. My average mutual was $8.80. Seems awfully low now, doesn't it? But boy, it was great then, of 63%. And when I thought a horse, he was 2-1 on the morning line and he paid less than even odds, and you're saying, well, that's dumb because you're going to lose money on that race. But then there's another one that was 2-1 and went up to 9-1. For every one that goes down, one will go up. It's the law of nature. So you actually make more money if you bet ahead of time. And you're not influenced by the odds. Now, I'm talking about your initial bank. So if, let's say you play 5 races, $40 a race. That's your 200. That's half of your 400. Now, it's out of your way. You can't do anything about it. It's in the hands of God and the fates. Now you got your little rubber band, and you got your little racing form, you got your readouts. Now you look at the tote board. Now you're free. Oh, gosh. I don't have that burden of who am I going to bet to win? And I don't have to worry about the guy on the line that stands ahead of me that has a friend who's a shed row walker who has a lock in the ninth. I don't have to worry about a darn thing. I can start using this. with my other $200. I can see, hey, wait a minute. Look at that horse. It was real strong on my, as a place horse. He's going to pay $8 to place and $4.80 to show or whatever. And you, supposing now you saw one of those horses that you had 40% on, it was going to be 2-1, or you had 60% on him, but it was going to be 2-1. Now he's gone up to 5-1. And you say, well, I'm going to put some more money on that horse, or I'm going to balance that bet out better. So you bet some more money on a horse you had. Or you might find a third choice. You're not betting three horses this way. You're betting two horses from one bank and one from another. Now, at the end of a week, you've written this all down. Forgot to mention that. Dick Schmidt will tell you about that. Buy a 49-cent notebook pad and write it all down, what you've done. At the end of the week, you see which one of these banks, how they've done. Now, my experience has been that they balance out. When this one makes less, this one makes more. When this one makes more, this one makes less. But occasionally, they both make big, and you'll double or triple your money on a given day. If you find that second bank, that your intuition bank, goes broke every week, that would suggest that you're doing something to block your intuition. Well, you ain't got none. But you really do. You really do. All of us do. But some of us have many mental and emotional barriers that block that intuition. And we want to have it written down, precise rules. So if that one's bothering you, there's a phone number I'll give you. And I got a couch. And you can come and visit, or you can do it on the phone. When you call me on the phone, lean back and relax. It's going to be therapy. We're not going to talk horses, folks, because your problems are not horses. Your problems are you're not letting that flow of mental energy do what it should do. Every one of you is a very bright individual. Every one of you has intuition. Every one of you can use it. You used it in your profession. You use it in your regular work. Why do we tend to block it in horse racing? Because we're not proud of being handicappers. We were proud of being architects or accountants or television engineers or regular engineers or doctors or lawyers. But, oh, we're not really proud of being handicappers, are we? Do we get up and shout from the roof, I am the world's greatest handicapper, or I'm aspiring to be the world's second greatest handicapper? That's good enough, second best. When you're proud of it, your intuition will work better for you. So your first step is to follow what Dick's going to tell you. And your second step, if you have trouble following the first with the same discipline that Dick does, and I know very few people with his discipline, then try this other one. And remember the wisest thing that I could say to you. If you can't double a $100 bank, you can't double a $10,000 bank. So start small and work your way up. That's what Dick Schmidt does. He started with, well, he'll tell you, a very small amount. And he worked his way up and he's never looked back. That's what we should all do. If you haven't written down your questions for Crossfire, get them up here, because that's going to be the highlight of the day when we bring up the intellectual handicapper, Tom Brohammer, with the intuitive handicapper, Jim Bradshaw, and you'll see how, whether they are apart or together. That's the climax of the program. Now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, walking up to our stage is a man who once had nothing, somebody gave him $200 as a Christmas gift, and now today he's rich. Dick Schmidt.
What do you mean, highlight? This is the highlight of the day. Come on now. Who said that? They're out of here. There were spiders coming last night.
Schmidt's really coming around.
They're little teeny suckers, but everyone saw them. I need some cord to roam here. Oh, boy. Okay, I can get down in the face of the whole first row. Particularly this guy. Well, I know this is what you've been waiting for. This is what you came for. Enough of this damn handicapping. Let's do some money management. Right? Yeah. I can see the enthusiasm on your faces. Yeah, you're all ready.
How long is this going to take? I want to set my alarm.
Yeah. No, I can work the room better because I can. You know, if anyone gets too wise, ha! They take that. Besides, after that thing, I have to get the mic
out in my mouth.
And I don't like that. They can't see my glowing face and beautiful features. Okay. How many of you took me seriously and wrote down a goal? I told you there was going to be a test. How many didn't? Let's see their real hands. Why not?
I couldn't formulate it. I tried.
You tried. All right. Well, then your goal is to formulate your goal. I mean, and let's face it, these are not, I want to go up and save the world. This is not the Miss America contest. And what do you want to do, darling? I want to promote world peace. No, we're talking handicapping goals here, obviously. I'm not sure I made that clear, but I don't really care if you want to promote world peace, you want to feed the hungry, all that kind of stuff. What you do with your money is your... We're talking about a handicapping goal here. Once the money is in your pocket, the goal is met. Why did you have trouble? What's the problem? Do you want to do this on a professional level?
No.
Okay, so you want to be a part-timer?
Yes.
You like what you do?
I like what I do in my job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love
okay,
it.
Well, that's great. Hey, that's the kind of goal, like Bert Main has the same thing. He has a calling. He's a Presbyterian minister. He doesn't want to do this full time. There's nothing wrong with that. And so you should probably have as a goal, I want to be so proficient, earn so much money, and have some free time, and be able to keep my job, whatever it is. See, it wasn't hard. I did it for you. Come on. So the reason I'm having you do this is, as I said Friday night, if you don't have a goal, you're just sort of floating, going with the current. Picture yourself in the great river of life, floating along. And some of us are just, you know, you're lucky, you got an inner tube, you know, and you're just floating along. But you never reach any place. You never get, you know, there's an island going by. Well, it might have been nice to stop, but, you know, too much trouble to paddle over there. Besides which, to get to the island, you had to start paddling way upstream to, you know, angle over there. Well, that island is where you want to be, maybe. But if you don't have the goal and you don't think, oh, I'd like to be on that island, until you get there, it's too late. You got to plan ahead. Boy, I like that analogy. I've never used that one before. I like that. Floating down the river of life. Okay. So if you just want to float, or if you're happy where you are now, then you've met your goal. But if you want to make a change in your life, whatever it may be, and only you know what changes you want, some of you are going to put your goals in terms strictly of dollars. Someone asked me yesterday about goals and said they shouldn't be strictly in terms of dollars. And I agreed with them. My goals are in terms of other things. The ability to take one day a week and play with my little boy. We go out, we have adventures. Tuesday, we're going to the zoo. And we're going to take a special class about elephants. That's not, you know, that's not going to pay me anything. That's not going to make me a dime. But I treasure that. And the ability to do that is very, very important to me. Freedom. Being able to get up in the morning and know I don't have to put on a necktie. Know that I don't have to do really anything that I don't want to do that day is something to be treasured. And that can be the kind of goal that you set. The ability to take control of your own life, your own destiny.